Like, that's how you get aliens. Exactly. It's like the glitch in the Matrix. No, Jonathan, you missed some of the earlier in the year. I did some spaces specific to like the creation of a blockchain based game system where the chain itself is the game for the most part. Like the actions you take on the chain, you know, influence sort of like the various tokens you receive, and you get benefits from holding certain ones longer or having certain combinations. And, you know, very similar to sort of like having a card deck of things, but it like abstract, eliminate all of the traditional gaming layers, the pictures, the whatever. You truly are just like your wallet is the game. Like this is the thinking. And different coins you hold have wild properties. Like, you know, if you're on, you have the coin of destruction, like the Shiva coin or something, then periodically, you know, that's going to help you like attack your opponent or whatever, right? Like, so, and there's some randomness involved and et cetera, et cetera. Now, like if you tie to that sort of like AI agents making some of the decisions as far as like what type of maybe like interesting game parameters happen. Like, let's say for example, the AI says, okay, everyone holding the Shiva token, realize that if you don't sell all of it by like, you know, the 30th of the month, like the thing is going to like drop by 90% of value on, you know, in exchange for trying to buy something or another. And it's creating these like mechanics where it forces sort of on-chain activity. And if you do the things that like optimize your bag in this like big mix, then you could basically out trade or out, like you could beat your friends or whoever's on there. But like my intuition is that ultimately, like, DeFi always felt like a game in and of itself. Like, you don't have to have a game on top of it, but if you like create a system like this, ultimately it could be the actual underpinnings for a decentralized monetary system, as wild as that sounds. Like, if you think about like the game mechanics behind, say, you know, mining Bitcoin or like validator networks or, you know, all these kinds of things, like what ultimately is necessary to sustain an economic network is transactional activity, human attention. And the way you get that is the game itself may actually be the basis for that. And if most of the tokens and this and that are given away, you also have a method for distributing tokens to large amounts of users who, you know, are, you know, captured by attention. So what you wind up with is an interesting token distribution model that allows you to then get to the point of like more credible decentralization. And you can't just like hoard one token or the other, because the game is going to prevent you from doing that. And it's going to like tend to favor, the game itself is going to tend to favor the decentralization or the distribution of all the various like the game tokens involved. So imagine like you have a dozen tokens, maybe three main ones and a dozen sub tokens or something like that. And then people are just monkeying around with these things like distributing more and more wallets. And like maybe sometimes you're benefited by, you know, sending these to a fresh wallet for some reason, and you know, or to a friend or whatever. And if those are like used in different ways, then, and then you can imagine people will abuse this system by using AIs to sort of like run bots, which is good because like you actually want more bots to be run on the network, not less. Does that make sense? Like, it's like a big mess of transactions that form the basis for a monetary system.
Well, I think that I see very similar, and kind of I'd love to compare notes. You know, two mechanisms are rebasing, like Ampleforth, Amplecoin, I think is very powerful to incentivize hodling or selling, and then also transfer tax. Are things like you had mentioned, you know, like the Shiva coin or like a Kali Ma coin, is that it can go through periods where it has a very low transfer tax, A very high transfer tax.
So, oh yeah, like pretty much you could make a list of every possible value mechanism out there, right? And you could like everything under the sun that you've ever seen in DeFi, anything you've seen in the scarcity idea, anything in the Bitcoin white paper, you know, things that we've learned about validator networks and everything. And you say to yourself, like, wait a minute, like how could you be sure that validator networks have sufficient increased transactions over time and that the thing is so interesting? Because like you, by playing the game, you're actually improving the decentralization of the network while having an actual product that you're delivering, which is the fun of playing the game, right? Like ultimately, like what is the product that the thing is making? Well, one is you could say, well, maybe people just want a store of value token, so they're going to play this game to develop it. But that doesn't make full sense. If entertainment is actually creating a store of value, then you get some of the effect that you do of like role-playing games and things like World of Warcraft or EverQuest or whatever, where the content within the ecosystem starts gaining value because the ecosystem itself is credibly decentralized itself and self-perpetuating, and therefore all the other crap on the chain is actually, you know, worth something. And then people could just build whatever apps they want on top of the 12 coin like paradigm is kind of what I was thinking. Like I considered it like maybe like 12 different actual chains. It's not actually even like one chain. That was like when Luna Feather Protocol, they were working on this idea that you could spin up like, you know, easy spin up a chain. It was just interesting to me that like maybe the right answer is like, you know, you have like almost like a Federal Reserve type system where there's like a dozen chains and they're all interacting with each other. And, you know, you get this like interesting decentralization that happens from that. And then, you know, you'll have like tribes form. Some people, you know, sort of like what you guys were doing with your NFT game to some extent, but like not just for fun and not just to like invest in an NFT, but the actual game is the whole point and actually has a function when you play it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think you need to, and some key elements of it is that, that, and I think that this was one of the things that we learned through that experience on Terra, is that you want half, you know, about half of the game to exist on chain, and then half of the game to exist as a tribal social element that exists primarily on, you know, Discord or, you know, on Secret.
Yeah,
on
Signal. Well, you certainly want to like harvest the attention economy for sure. So all possible ways that you could collude with your friends to like do on-chain actions, right? Like one of the concepts I had for the game was like, all right, so you have this like dozen tokens and, you know, like there is, look, it looks like a dragon has to be killed at the end of the month or whatever. And everyone has to figure out like that's on this particular team who wants to beat that dragon has to make certain financial choices. They have to get rid of some tokens, have to gain others. And the group has to function together because if there's not enough people with this particular type of token distribution, then you're not going to be able to win the event at the end of the month. Stuff like that, right? So like it incentivizes grouping, very similar to how like EQ and World of Warcraft incentivize grouping. It incentivized playing again and again. And you have to always incentivize the new user, by the way. Like a huge thing is you can never have a game where like the NFT or whatever it is prices the new user out of existence, right? Like the old guys that were playing the game have all this like, you know, cool stuff. But like if I come and play the game, like I can't start fresh and then do okay. So a big part of something like this would be a vast majority of the tokens in the economy would actually be given away for free. Like that's how the game would work. It's weird, but like the game itself is fundamentally free. And that way it's infinitely scalable as far as like the number of people who might want to play. And so that's another piece of the puzzle that has to be figured out. And then like how you get monetizing this would be like, you know, if you have a credibly decentralized scheme that everyone can believe is like fair, then what will happen is you can monetize the apps on top of that, that people might build. Like they might build sub games on top of the thing and stuff like that. And that could generate money.
I agree with a lot of what you said, but I think that it is very valuable to, and also a good Sybil resistance element to have it start out with some type of pay to play. Like even if it's just like, you ante up with 10 bucks.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be very much, is my point. Like, you don't have to be like a mega whale to win. Otherwise, it's not going to succeed. I guess that's my
point. that's where the AI changing the rules comes in, is that on one hand, you want to allow people to come in very cheaply, to pick which team that they're on, to be able to bring resources to the team so they're an active participant and a valued participant in the game. But you don't want it to be that just, you know, the team that ends up rallying, you know, 10,000 people to put in 10 bucks is just, you know, de facto going to beat the team that could only get 300 people to put in 10 bucks. So there has to
be... Yeah, what are those equalizing factors to prevent, like, an obvious Sybil situation of some kind?
Yeah.
Or just an army of bots that would do it, like... That's the other thing.
You can have non-playing characters. I mean, non-playing characters that have things that they can bestow upon, you know, weaker teams, or, you know, comes back to the bullet and the blue shell metaphor. And I think in order to have it be something that I think that it is important that there's some type of visual elements to it, both in terms of from the marketing perspective, like people like to look at things, and it needs to be something that is brand related that can be shared. And I like the idea of land and land capture. I think that that's one way, you know. And if you had, let's say, you had a grid that's almost like an infinitely growable grid, so it could start, you know, in the center of like hexagons, and you know, you buy in, and you're essentially just buying in a hexagon. I put a link in the chat here for a game such as what I'm describing, which I wrote a couple weeks ago, the initial outline for.
Part of the reason why I think like the initial coin system architecture for the game may be actually more important than the game. It's like the there's different layers of meta, is that like what you're describing, which would be the board game type of thing, or maybe like people develop an RPG or whatever on top of it, like they have a coin system that then can generate. Like, since we know it's credibly decentralized because of this underlying game, there may be reasons to acquire certain tokens, not for the core game, but to play the hexagon game, whatever. Like, so you see my point, like, once this token system works, then you can sort of like do interesting things with it, or even sub tokens within that system, or maybe like the basis for like a building like a local stable coin, for example, that you use just within the game for certain purposes or whatever. And I think there's a, like, ultimately, it's to me, it's like looking at what happened with Terra, looking what happened with like just DeFi in general, the issue with Sybil, the issue with like validator centralization. There's a lot of pieces of this where it's like, to me, it's like the validators are also playing this game. Does this make sense? Like, you can't just be like Coinbase and stake all your shit on like one validator and then get away with it. You're going to get like indirectly punished. But you can't just simply Sybil it by dividing it all up and then creating more validators, because that creates a different set of problems. You have to balance this out to where like the gamers are actually fixing the system and righting the ship, if that makes sense. And then all the other kind of pieces and games can be built on top, is my theory. Like, I'm not sure it's going to ever work, but like this is just my working theory. Like, so maybe some like food for thought for you guys to think about how to.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And I think if you can get an underlying DeFi protocol that generates enough revenue and then allocates, you know, enough revenue, like let's say that you can put $10,000 a week that's non-inflationary, you know, from a protocol's collected fees, that you know, becomes the actual rewards that can be achieved on a weekly basis by various different teams. And then that that activity either acts indirectly as marketing for the underlying protocol in order to help it generate more real yield, or it's actually baked into it that the actions that you perform are, you know, things like staking, taking positions, hedging, you know, that the rewards are essentially just paid out, similar to today's, you know, how you use an exchange and you end up getting token rewards for using that exchange, or, you know, the fees that are collected, they're distributed to the stakers. So it's, you know, since it's winning at the game is essentially being a bigger validator set and then thus getting more rewards from, you know, this Epochs distribution.
Right. And this is kind of why I had this like idea that you're really dealing with like a series of chains. It'd be like, it's almost like if you had three or like even a dozen at one time and they're all interacting with each other. And like, you know, a balancing, rebalancing this mechanism of sort of like validator centralization. So the concept ultimately would be like somehow or another, the game solves the problem of proof of stake networks that we have now. Of like really the validator centralization problem. How do we solve for that in a meaningful way? And I suspect the answer to that is somewhere in the game theory. And either the players are humans or the players are AIs. It could be either one, I suppose.
And it could be a combination of both.
Or you know, both.
Good games have non-playing characters. I'd love to see it just make Cosmos more resilient by, you know, incentivizing people to do things like spam attacks and and just invalid transactions and, you know, I mean, all the stuff that we saw with Osmosis over the past week where,
or the craziest thing is you make spam attacks part of the game. Like, you know, like exactly, that's just part of
exactly.
it. That'd be weird.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, well, that's what we are seeing, you know, the Tia airdrop happened and, you know, somebody, at least from the outside looking in, you know, somebody wanted to make sure that they were, you know, getting their tokens into the Osmosis liquidity pool. Other people weren't, so that they were getting the fees that were going to be traded, you know, over the first 12 hours. And whoever was successful at that made a lot of money. And they didn't, you know, cheat, so to speak. They didn't cheat Osmosis. They just, you know, spammed Osmosis to the point where only their transactions could go through, only their liquidity could be put into the pool. And then only, you know, large traders who were going to generate fees for them were able to, you know, front run the run of the token. And we see this play out numerous times, but it's usually done from a nefarious perspective. But it could be done as part of a form of entertainment, and it could be done to further the evolution and development of resilience around these types of attacks.
I just feel like every one of these weaknesses has to somehow be spun into something proactively beneficial. Because if the outcome is inevitable, whether it's Sybil, whether it's validator centralization, or any of these things, then you have to ask yourself, well, how do we turn that into a strength somehow? And I think not enough has, I mean, this is basically the root concept of biology, basically, right? Like, I mean, like biological systems. And this is why, like, I sort of favored some of Ethan Buckman's ideas of how these things should work. But he never really took the biomechanics or biologic piece to its conclusion and create a project that actually does this. But like organisms do this, basically, right? Like ecosystems do this. They're self-regulating to some extent. Outside of like a major attack, like for example, the Earth can sustain life and everything, and everything sort of hums along. Of course, it can't handle like a meteor strike, you know that, or maybe like a, you know, some kind of gigantic collision, or the sun explodes or something. So certain things it can't handle, but outside of certain extremes, like biological ecosystems just hum along and work together. And I think there's a survival of the fittest element to that. There's a constant battle for energy and a constant battle for resources. And to me, it's like, I think if we have a system of chains or a validator system that is subdivided in such a way where they compete with each other in some form or fashion or have to play a game, it might make it harder to perform Sybils or some of these other exploits, or make it like that, you know, you almost have to do those things, otherwise it won't work right. It's like you're almost forced to do it that way.
DeFi.
Yeah, I like what they did with the Curve Wars. They kind of turned the Curve Wars into a game where, you know, you got to reallocate the profits from Curve if you were staking and voting for it to be part of the pools that you owned. And so just taking that and kind of leaning in on some type of a narrative, leaning in on, you know, some type of a theme, you know, adding the game board, so to speak. I think that's something that, you know, could scale to hundreds of thousands of users participating. And the more that they coordinated better, not necessarily the more participants on each team, but the more that they coordinated better, the better that they would perform from a financial perspective.
Yeah, CeFi, what it seems like what you're describing is sort of a novel decentralization scheme. You could call it like an orthogonal decentralization scheme. And I don't know if you've heard of Donald Hoffman, but you might want to check out his work. He has this theory. It's called the interface theory of perception. And it's basically this idea that he's ran all these like simulations, and he's figured out that basically the world that we see is like a mask over a much more complex world. And, you know, what he found out was there's something going on behind the scenes that is completely separate from, you know, what we see and observe in the world. And it reminded me of were saying about how, you know, in order to achieve decentralization.
You basically, the idea is like there's layers of games and machinery going on. Like even as we talk right now, we have like little machines all over our body doing all sorts of interesting things, and we're not privy to what they do and how they do it and what they do, but we know they're keeping us alive, right? Like even the billions and trillions of bacteria that are in our body, I think it's like 10 trillion bacteria to 1 trillion human cells, something approximately that ratio. Like they're doing shit in our body and we can't live without them, but we don't know exactly what they're doing. But there's a dance happening in our body that allows that to us to survive, right? So the idea of this game would be like, there are some people that are playing this game. There are some validators or whatever that are involved with the game. And the interplay of all of that creates not only like the resistance to some of the centralization problems, but might also be the driving force for the base layer of economic activity to make the system viable and profitable in some way to those that are like, so you incentivize everyone properly. And then the next layer of that would be like, okay, if you have that functioning well, then is there a reason why people would build on top of this or build additional things? But what we do know is for sure is like what kind of things do people need? Like we know that people need like some sort of stable value coin. We know that whether or not you like what happened to Terra, UST or whatever, the reality is the product market fit is really strong. People want a stable because it allows you to like, you know, peg the value of your hamburger from day to day or to something. The other thing people want is a store of value. So like a gold or a Bitcoin that is digital is something that clearly has product market fit. That fungibility and, you know, and all of the functions of money, people definitely want that. But what we've had problems with, whether it's Ethereum or anybody, like, is some sort of centralization issue. Like in the setting of Ethereum, you wind up with, you know, Lido Finance or whatever, you know, carrying too much of the staked ETH or whatever, that there's always some problem that emerges. That's the other thing, Jonathan, like one thing we noticed in proof of stake was the natural, you know, outcome ends up being proof of stake. I'm sorry, liquid stake tokens, and those liquid stake tokens end up resulting in governance centralization problems and all sorts of issues on that side of things. So what people then realize is, wait a minute, like maybe the chain itself has to have native liquid staking. But if that's the case, how do you then vote for your shit, right? Like, so you almost have to separate the governance token from the economic model somehow. But if you don't, but if you do that, like then you have other set of problems. So I think the game would settle the problem of handling the distribution of tokens and keep validators in check in terms of centralization. And then the governance piece would be almost a meta on top of that, not necessarily the base layer. So for example, if you look at human activities today, we're all talking right now, the bacteria in our body don't give a shit what's happening to our politics. They don't care if you're left wing, right wing. They don't care if you're a libertarian, whatever, like you, they don't care about your religion. They don't care about any of that. They're just humming along doing their thing. And then people can have, you know, governance arguments and like religious arguments and everything else on top of that. As you get like bigger and bigger groups of people, you have that. But like tying the governance token into the primary sort of like network, I'm not 100% sure that's the correct way to deal with that. I also feel like, Jonathan, like ultimately the base game has to be immutable. Like the tokenomics of the base game and the base network should not change. You should not upgrade it. You shouldn't do shit to it. It really needs to be immutable. Because once you have that, then you can build all sorts of interesting things on top of that that don't change every 5 minutes and don't have to be updated for that. So whatever this is would have to be built to like near perfection at the base level for the primary core token set. And that game theory has to be really, really well defined and obviously done correctly the first time because you don't have a lot of experimentation room to play around with it like after the fact. So that's a difficult
thing to do. Safi.
Yep. What's up, Webby?
What kind of dubious speculation is going on here?
Are we talking about the pumping of my Link token that you guys are all buying?
This guy is a...
or what?
Yes. There is some high level of dubious speculation.
Solana Manlet. Oh, what is Solana Manlet alert.
Wabi, I don't know if you've met Jonathan here, but he's...
What are you hooligans up to?
Well, Jonathan here works with Levana Protocol, so he's done some work in like NFT games and also blockchain with like perps and everything. So we're just bouncing off idea of I was just throwing some ideas at him since I had his ear, and I'm always looking for I'm trying to find someone that's going to build what I'm talking about, and I haven't found that group yet. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I just have a sense of the theory of it. But like, that's why like every developer I try to pitch this theory to, that someone will build this at some point or at least use the ideas.
This is my next project. Like this is what interests me. You know, the game theory element of it is really the driver that keeps me in the crypto space. So I just to push back on what you're saying.
And that's part of why I've been talking your ear off, because I know that that's what you love that sort of thing, which is why I brought it up. But it's an idea I've been building up over the last about year and a half that I have some theories about. But anyway, it's something that has a lot of holes have to be poked in and adjusted.
Yeah, and I don't think it has to be perfect. I think that if you can design it in a way that there's like epochs or rounds, and that those rounds are reviewed and then improved upon. And I think that what's really important is that the immutability is on a per round basis, and that the rules are transparent and even agreed upon, at the beginning of the round. And then that in of itself becomes part of the game. Is that, you know, is there going to be like going back to like a land capture board game? So if the way that people are expressing this is that you get there's certain types of weapons, there's certain types of defense, there's owning assets which then produce assets that can be, you know, captured, disabled, or enhanced. And there's some concept of travel. So, you know, gaining more resources does require more, you know, clock cycles within the experience. So then you can, you really can change, you could introduce, a jetpack in a future epoch. And if you had these things over the course of like, they ran month by month with some type of a downtime where there could be proposals of new elements that can be added to it, then you can put in safety mechanisms so that people aren't going to get just like wiped out early on. You know, there can be max gains, max losses as things are kind of like being figured out. And then this game kind of naturally evolves until it gets to a state where it's either large enough with enough players and enough economic activity that it becomes a tragedy of the commons, that now it's impossible to get consensus around upgrades. And then that's a good thing. And now you've kind of got the product in its final form. And I think that's kind of what we've seen happen with Bitcoin, is that, love it or hate it, is that it got big enough that it became very challenging for consensus to agree upon any, radical changes to the system.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think like in this instance, radical changes will need to be there, because if you've created the system to produce for you some sort of stable, some sort of store of value or a series of store of value coins, and maybe you had things like you know, everything from perp dexes to, you know, grid bots that are running games in between, like trying to balance the different pools out somehow, then you sort of like, it just creates its own dex in a sense, because the game by itself sort of like creates a price discovery for various sub tokens within the system, depending what people want to do with their coins and what, like, what proportions or distributions they want to have. And it's interesting that like the game itself creates the liquidity for the exchange of the various sub tokens within it. And then like maybe with the, with all of this group of 12 coins, there's like, you know, sort of like one ring to rule them all sort of thing, like a Lord of the Rings kind of idea, where the primary, so that primary token might end up being where the value capture happens. So if you didn't want to play the game, all you wanted to do is like, you know, accrue the value of the core store of value that's being built, then you just buy that. Like, let's say the core token is Atom or something, and you buy that and you just hold it. So a speculator that just simply wants to speculate on the future of this network could do so without playing the game. And that indirectly helps both finance the transactions in the game, but also brings like the credible decentralization that brings value back to the store of value piece. Does that make sense? Like there's like a, you're kind of creating like what DeFi has done so far, but you're gamifying the entirety of it. Like,
well, I see it as there's three actors, like there's three players. There's the player that simply wants to hold assets and then benefit off of the work of others, which is a critical element of the ecosystem. And then there's on the complete other side, there's the master planners who are creating the strategies for each game cycle, how they will become enriched along with their community becoming enriched. And then there's the active community members themselves, which aren't necessarily, you know, the major strategists, but they're listening to the strategists, and then they're performing the actions, which then if performed correctly, will result in the enrichment of their group. And if you can have
too. It's like almost like the max Ponzinomics plus max pyramid scheme. So like indirectly, you as the player are benefited by finding other players to play. Like that would be a pretty typical element in sort of like capturing the attention economy. So there's a SocialFi element to it, but you don't have to call it SocialFi. It's like that, those networks inform separate to the primary thing. You don't have to like build that in at all. So like the base game would be very, very simple. Like you don't try to like build everything. You just create the basically monetary policy that results in people wanting to play and play on top of it. So think of it as a game board to some extent with like fungible tokens that help you, you know, do all those things. But yeah, I can see what you're saying with the different groups as far as like, who are you incentivizing to do what?
Yeah, I think there's some attempts that have been made around these concepts. Like I think Loot was originally designed, you know, to be this base economy of assets that then games could be built on top of. But I think that it wasn't, there wasn't enough mechanic built into the assets themselves so that it failed. You know, then they tried Loot Gold to create a fungible token around it, which would be that commerce token or the store of value token. But I think that there's a few other elements, like for example the worker token, the token that, you know, can be staked to something and then earn from it, or can be used in combination, whether it's with non-fungibles or whether it's with, you know, pooled together through a group of people similar to distributed delegated proof of stake, which then kind of activate a reward system. So you've got then those three different types of actors, you know, the hodler, you know, the flipper, and you know, and the Jedi. And if it can,
you also have to be kind of incentivized to do things like you know, this is the, like, imagine, think of like a zodiac. This is the month of Scorpio or something. And what's happening this month is different. People behave differently. They do different things. But like one of those different things might be, let's say you have the primary staking token of the system, for example. If you hold the A, B, and C token, well, your yield is higher on your core thing. So therefore, you might be incentivized to go buy a little bit of the ABC token, more of it for some reason, because, you know, that month this change has occurred, right? So like the monetary policy is a bit random, not so much so that it's not, it's completely a mess, but random enough or to the extent, like, you know, some things will be announced like 3 months ahead of time, but other things would be much more similar to like a hurricane hitting and be a bit more random, like, you know, 3 days from now, ooh, the hurricane is coming. It's going to, you know, cause everyone that holds these three coins to sort of like, you know, be vulnerable somehow. And so therefore, like, you're going to go and follow a dashboard and play with your coin distribution because you want your yield to stay the same as it was before or something, like, you know, interesting dynamics like that, that kind of, you know, play out and force transactions or incentivize them to an extent. And then you can't predict them all, but you can predict that they're coming. Does that make sense? Like if you live in Florida, like, you're pretty sure periodically a hurricane's going to hit your house. You have to then have like insurance to make sure that your house doesn't get like, you can build it back if it breaks. You might build it out of cinder blocks or something because, you know, you don't want your house to fall down. And so you prepare for this, the nature events that are going to happen, but you can only prepare to a certain extent. And depending on the sort of position you're building, you would need to sort of like bolster that in some way. And that's kind of where the game comes in, but it's not all completely predictable. So you don't know exactly when a hurricane is going to hit, and you don't know when you're going to need to use your resources to like fight a dragon, you know, or maybe like, and some events might be yearly, but like the perfect quintessential example of this is the Bitcoin halving, right? Like the whole point of it was to shake up the system every certain number of blocks so that, it forces miners and all market participants to make a change in the case of Bitcoin, to upgrade miners. But the change was predictable enough that you could prepare for it. But it's raucous enough to cause a major upset in the way the chain works pre and post halvening in terms of hardware, right? That, like, it could have been like Kadena blockchain where it, like, the difficulty just ramps up over time. Whereas the Bitcoin version of this was basically made to create an actual event, and that event drives deterministic activity. And that's kind of how I see you know, something getting built, is where the game would essentially have some of these things that are random, but some of these things that are truly like announced like 4 years ahead, right? Like, you know, you, like, if you prepare for this event 4 years ahead, you're going to do better than your peers who are not preparing for this particular event.
Yeah, I want to see.
And I think we have that as humans. Well, please go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, we do.
I want to see the
Like, we have it as humans. Go ahead, sorry.
It's all good. I want to see the butterfly effect implemented into a game. That would be sick. Powered by a Chainlink VRF. Step on a butterfly.
Interesting.
Cause a tsunami.
Yeah, that was sort of what I was, that's the reason why I, like, my thought was that you need like a series of tokens, like a dozen or so, because, like, think about DNA, for example. You have four letters, you know, whatever, and you can create like life, you know, whatever, you know. So the idea is like you can get so many permutations out of a system with a very, very simple game, right? Think about how simple DNA is in terms of code. But look at like the robustness of life on the planet. And yeah, the butterfly effects, like, yeah, this idea that you won't fully know like what kind of communities are gonna occur, how they're going to decide to game the system and whatever, right? Like, you know, like that should be really the exciting part, is watching it play out as a butterfly effect. But yeah, I'm fully up for that. And to prevent it from being like too predictable, like, you don't want it to be like there's only one way to win the game. That's when like either AI or like an event driven system that's, you know, with credible randomization, because there's a blockchain on like there's a Cosmos blockchain, I believe it's called Noise, if I'm not mistaken, NOIS or something like that. I don't remember the exact name, but like they claim to be able to provide credible randomization. And so you could attach to that chain and like get a random number or whatever it is. You can be sure it's fairly random, and you can use that for driving the game and driving events, or you can have like some AI bot do these events, or you have that have it play out via like butterfly effect, meaning like if like there's too many of these three coins people own, then they become at increased risk of danger because there's too much centralization of those. And so like there's going to be a wipeout coming and a hurricane's going to come and knock you down or whatever. So you might be incentivized to sort of like go neutral and have like one of each coin, like maybe one of all 12. But then like, you know, maybe that's not beneficial for certain events. You need more of one coin versus the other. That's where the proportionality sort of comes in. And so you're balancing the fun of the game with the like the needs of the decentralized network. And in the player doesn't really notice, it may or may not notice all of these nuances, but in the background, butterfly effects are happening one after the other. Like it's just a constant series of them.
Well, I think also if you can add something like a secret network and you can get asymmetric knowledge where I might have, you know, poker is only possible because we have asymmetric knowledge. I don't know what's in the deck. I don't know what's in your hand. I don't know what's in my hand. But if we have teams, then we can, you know, we can cross-reference what's in each other's hands. And now we have to worry about data leaking. You know, are there spies? Are there people playing for multiple teams? And so that creates like a really interesting off-chain element. And maybe there'll be a pack of cards that nobody wants to share because it's just too sensitive.
Like chess is not asymmetric in that respect.
It doesn't matter what side of the board you're on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then in terms of the epochs, you know, I think holidays are a great example of that. You know, everything gets kind of, you know, thrown around, you know, when like, you know, like very little work gets done in December. And so everybody's schedules have to be adjusted and we have to prepare for it. And, you know, your financial situation has to be very different in December than it is, you know, in other times of the year. You know, same thing with like March, like around, you know, spring break or the summer. And so having these types of clear epochs where economic requirements are changed, you know, with that little bit of flair of randomness can be, you know, it can be very powerful in terms of gameplay, especially when you have that asymmetric knowledge.
Yeah, but like some of the theories I had were just like depending on where you sort of parked or staked your various tokens, which maybe deity you staked them with, or which avatar you staked them with, or which team you staked them with, or whatever, you could actually produce heroes within your system. So, for example, if people want to like, you know, support the Fildo team, then they'll go and provide these particular tokens to Fildo and he'll be the hero of the, you know, who has to go fight the dragon. So like all these interesting ways, but like, yeah, if you add in the other element of like the secret network concept, then you could create in theory a situation where you don't know what the opponent's hero has in terms of stake. And so that puts another difficulty into the scheme. Interesting. But I think that there's room for both. Like you could have things that are completely transparent and other things that are asymmetric knowledge where you're not sure. And then another element is going to be the randomization. And then another portion is the chronotropic like effect, which is where like there's a chronicity to some of the activities, like the halvening. Bitcoin halvening is like a timed event. Other things will be random. Other things will be group events, singular. So yeah, I think a lot of games do a lot of this. If you think of like just playing Diablo or World of Warcraft or whatever, people have really thought quite deeply about all of this. But I don't think necessarily I'm happy with like crypto gaming having done any of this. Like I know people have tried to produce games like, you know, I don't know, like tie some sort of 3D realm to some crypto coin or something. And then you're buying like $10,000 NFTs for some spaceship skin or something like that. And I can see why that might be interesting, but that's not exactly what I'm getting at. To me, the actual process of playing on your wallet with a dashboard of like events and things that are happening might be enough to actually run the game. You don't need a whole lot of like graphical user interface, like, you know, you don't have to be living in a 3D world or some metaverse bullshit. Like the world that we already live in is a big ass metaverse. Like I've noticed when everyone was doing DeFi and people were like playing on like Kujira during the before the Terra crash, where they were playing with like leveraging things and then borrowing and like, you know, buying things and playing around with their shit coins or whatever. What you noticed was like the entire thing was just this gigantic video game. Everyone tuned in to like, you know, push their button on Prism Protocol so that they can get like the whatever little bit of extra yield for playing the game. That was extraordinarily popular. And part of the reason why sort of Terra blew up, people like really enjoyed it, not because of just the stablecoin element, but all this other cool shit that was happening. And I think like we learned a lot of like human behavior lessons in DeFi, where a lot of the people that were hardcore in DeFi, like literally like they just like playing the game, right? Like they wake up in the morning, they check their wallet, like, did my shit go up? Did it go down? Do I have to go in over here and like, you know, claim my tokens and restake them so I can get better yield? And right, like it was, the entire thing was like this optimization game, and that by itself was fun. So yeah, I think the base game doesn't need to be very complicated to generate a lot of interest. It just has to be like, the big thing though has to be the newcomer has to get benefits. It can't just be a pay to play either, because those pay to play games, you know how that went, like the VC funding or whatever runs out, the coin pumps for a while because everyone's excited, but then when the price of the token's going down, the economy crashes. It's like you can't peg the community to the value of the coin, otherwise what you get is like a DPEG. Like, you know, it's like a like look what happens in crypto when the prices of coins go down. Everyone leaves. So like, where the fuck did everyone go? Oh, I don't know. Like, they just disappeared because they're upset that their bags are down. Like, you can't have that happen in a game. The game has to be interesting regardless of like how your investment's doing. And that's a key intuition. Like, how do you keep those users throughout bear cycles and bull cycles? That's the mystery. And I think it can be done through game theory if the game is interesting and fun enough, but also doesn't have to be something you have to log into every 5 minutes. Like, maybe there are some reasons why you might want to log in frequently, but like usually something like this would be like, I don't know if Jonathan, were you around when like door games were around for like the early BBS systems, and Tale of the Red Dragon, I think, was one of them, or Legend of the Red Dragon Lord was one of the early games. And it was like you'd log on to with your modem to a BBS system. This is before like the internet and whatnot, so we're like losing half the audience here.
But is this like a MUD?
Not a MUD, before MUDs. MUDs were like when like multi-user domains or whatever. Door games were like little bitty like games you'd play that you could only like do a certain number of actions per day. Because it was on modem, so like they couldn't have a user just sit there all day and night and win the game. You would log in and do actions like every, like you'd have 15 minutes of playtime a day or something like that. You know, so the point of it was like it was fun, but you had to log in daily to play it briefly. And
I think that even just getting somebody to show up for 30 seconds a day is really important.
That's important, exactly. That's exactly right. Like people had a lot of fun during Prism Protocol, and they had some button you had to push, some confetti shows up and you claim your points for the day or some shit. And like, and a lot of people did this stuff and had a good time with it. So it's this kind of bio, it's like this feedback loop of like almost an event or a meditation. It becomes a part of your daily practice, you know, sort of like, you know, people go and pray every day, or people like clean their house every day or do the dishes every day. It's like, how do you get someone to log in every day, play this for, like, look at their dashboard for a minute, like make some transactions, move some coins around. And that's the base game right there. Like there's no, you're not sitting, this is not like a table game that I'm envisioning where you have to sit there for an hour or two or whatever and mess around with the thing. Like by looking at the dashboard quickly and looking at the objectives for the month, for the week, and for the day, you can decide what you're going to prioritize depending on your time horizon. And or which team you're on or whatever, and you can quickly see like, okay, who's winning and who's losing, and like, are we gonna make it, like are we gonna be able to kill this dragon, man, we don't have enough like, you know, supporters, go get your friends and family to come play or something, you know. So like you want to have something that's easy to look at, quick, and then just a daily play, in my view. So each user is maybe interacting with the, like maybe doing like you know, like just a few transactions per day, if not even that. And if you, let's say you're on a vacation and you miss like 2 weeks, you know, of whatever you're playing or something, you're not an airplane or whatever, like, you know, you're not going to lose out too much. Like the idea is that, like, you know, it doesn't only favor the person who's just only looking at this thing day in, day out. You could do long-term objectives, if not short-term.
Well, I also like the idea for the daily activities that you can farm those out to other people. You know, I take it like when my son went to summer camp, so, you know, he was gone for 2 weeks, so my wife did his Duolingo.
Yeah. Or like, you know, these like Jurassic Park games, like these iPad games, you know, how you like farm the gold from the different like properties you have on the game. You've seen these things where it's like, okay, like this thing will produce gold every hour, and this thing over here produces it every 4 hours, and that over there produces gold every day. And so, like, depending on if you did log in every damn hour, then yes, you would get more gold and you'd get more transactions in. But like, you don't have to do that all the time to have fun playing it. And so those types of recurring things are kind of obvious. But like every single action you take, like the idea would be that it promotes the decentralization of the system. The playing of the game is sort of like healing and repairing the system in the background somehow. And that's a key function. And that's also an interesting thing too, is like, if you look at Luna UST and all of that, and you looked at people's behavior, like a lot of people that really wanted UST to succeed because they thought it was like really important to have a decentralized stable, they really, really supported the ecosystem, played on the ecosystem, bought Luna and did whatever else, right? So there's this concept that if you believe that the game has a meta that is deeper than simply just playing a game, like if you're playing chess every day, but you realize that, you know, playing chess is going to give you world peace or some shit, that's a different thing, right? Like the, like a deeper meta that you're actually...
Or even that you're just going to make money off of it, I think. And it doesn't have to be a lot of money.
I think the money, making the money off of it's like good, but like at the same time, if you look at how religions are, like, you know, in a sense that like there is a deeper meaning that you're actually accomplishing something while playing this too.
Yeah, you could call it like an incentive alignment platform. And,
yeah, it like some people like that idea resonates with them, that there has to be a bigger overarching goal. Like think about like the like Bitcoin crowd, right? What do you have? You have a group that like believes in decentralized money. You have a group of people that wants to have like immutable money. You want to have something that is censorship resistant. You want to have something that you can transfer to your friend at a whim without, you know, having to have like, you know, the permissionless aspect of it. And all of these things like are vibing with people with a relatively more like, you know, libertarian viewpoint, where it's like you believe that money should be and your store of value should be under your control and you should be able to transmit it freely, right? So that creates like a ethos that goes beyond just like, okay, do I have enough Bitcoin to make enough money with it or whatever. So there are some of us that are like more deep cultists when it comes to this sort of thing, like, you know.
Yeah. And one example that people might be more familiar with, you mentioned this other game, but actually in World of Warcraft, you had this thing, it was called Sleep, where you log off for, you know, a couple days, and then you log back in, and you get a little bonus bar that fills up, and so you get to gain XP faster when you log back in. And yeah, there's like a lot of, I think, it probably more interesting ways than that's like a very simple example, but I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of very interesting ways of implementing that, taking, you know, incentivizing, you know, breaks so you don't have this like gaming addiction problem, and also kind of like your idea earlier about HRV training, you could have like a vibe check where, you know, checks your heart rate and makes sure that you're healthy. Might give you a little bonus.
Well,
or incentive.
The thing about real world data is that anytime you're doing anything off chain, and there's like a winning incentive for it somehow, there's like incentivization to manipulate that.
Yeah. What was that coin that you got for walking?
Exactly. That coin you got for walking, that's interesting on a personal level. I don't remember the name of the coin. I forget now. Step or some shit. Like, but what was interesting about it was like, okay, you got some sort of coin for walking or something like that. But it was interesting. But at the same time, it's like, eventually, if the thing has enough value, if the step coin is worth $1 million a coin, obviously there's a reason to exploit the thing. And this is the problem with real world data.
Yeah, HRV might be perfect actually, because I'm pretty sure your heart has a signature, you know, just like your face. We all log into our banking app with our face, you know, unless you're super paranoid. To me, my laziness has overpowered my.
Yeah, but what about
you can spoof it though.
What about farming it? I mean, but then you can open up like an office in the Philippines and just have like 1,000 people.
Yeah, well,
wearing those rings or
whatever. Yeah, sure. But you know, there's bots that exist everywhere today. Like at the end of the day, it's like it just has to be a below a threshold that like is, you know, is it functional? Like Twitter is functional. There's still a lot of bots, and you know, I'm sure it's going to be improved over time. But I think it's just you have to keep it. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be, you know, you keep it in check however you can.
Yeah, the bot issue becomes like if you create some sort of game system that's crypto-based like we're discussing, you'd have to figure out how to make the bots a net positive. Like the transactions that they're performing, you cannot discriminate against the bot user versus the regular user any more than like on a centralized exchange, you're going to discriminate between someone who puts a limit order in, between someone who has a grid bot running, between someone who has a perp running, or whatever, right? Like the automation stuff has to somehow enhance the game. And if you can incentivize people to do a whole bunch of transactions for no other reason but to like, you know, make their portfolio look better or whatever, like, and everyone's running little bots, fine. Maybe then you get just, people can just push a button and use bots as a service at that point, right? Because like, if everyone has that capability, then like, it's not an edge anymore, so to speak, right?
Well,
like, there's
well,
ways
that comes at the entrance fee. You know, if every bot has
right.
to put in $10,
right?
Then a million bots is gonna bring in $10 million that now, you know, that could be distributed to superior players or teams.
And Jonathan, not just the entrance fee. Think about it like we charge transaction fees on blockchains. The game tokens might be mostly free or like, you know, sprayed upon the population with various events and stuff. Like, so you get this wild distribution, but the actual transacting of those fees, staking them, pooling them, whatever the heck you're going to do with them, you have to pay for that piece. So the transaction fees may be quite low, but ultimately it's the system is actually running on, you know, the token that actually you have to use for the fee for the system somehow. And like, there's probably, you'd have to create a method whereby the fees don't get obnoxious. You don't want it to become like Ethereum or whatever. So like with some level of scaling, fees should go down so that way the relative fees in the network don't get obnoxious. Otherwise, who the hell is going to play? Like whatever it is, you have to make sure that the system scales in such a way that you're incentivized to play more, not less, and you have more users, not less. And that's the trick. How do you get that to work? And this is why, like, I think one of the things that I was thinking of was maybe it has to be to be appropriately scalable, it might need to be like an app chain type thesis where you have lots of chains so that you have, it's very difficult to overwhelm the system in terms of transactions because you're doing things.
Maybe roll ups on Celestia, something.
Or
like
maybe roll ups. Yeah, there may be other, like, I don't know all the technical details, but yeah, there may be ways to. Prevent having to use like a really more complicated system.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to sleep. This is a super interesting conversation. You know, this
good
is
fun.
You know, the architecture that we built for Lavana was very much inspired from, you know, going from a game theory element as to, you know, seeing the players as the short traders, long traders, delta neutral traders, liquidity providers. And then even, you know, the bad actors, like, you know, the people that are trying to manipulate the Oracle or shut down the base chain. And so it's there's internally we have very theatrical narratives for all of these things. And I think that it, you know, once there is that kind of base level of stability where, you know, you're covering operational costs and then you start looking at a treasury that grows and you decide, okay, so how can we take some of this LARPing that we've been modeling internally, and how do we make the LARPing either a competitive advantage to the product or a marketing tool to help grow the product.
By the way, Jonathan, before you go, what's the easiest way for people to use Lavana now? Is it to go on Like which wallet and what interface is the easiest way to use it now?
Osmosis is where most of the activity. We just passed $400 million of trading volume on Osmosis. So you go to trade.lavana.finance, and you know it supports MetaMask and Kepler and other Cosmos wallets. You know, it's still a very young protocol. It doesn't have anything really fun in it in the front end, but just trying to grind.
And this is built as a on top of Osmosis.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay. Built on top of Osmosis. But at this point, I think we're getting like, 5-10x the trading volume that Osmosis gets on a daily basis.
Yeah, I heard it was becoming impressive. Good job. Yeah, it's I think it's worth checking out and playing with.
Yeah, but a lot of work to get to the vision. You know, the vision that you described is like, that's the lighthouse, and we just got to figure out how to get there.
Very good. Have a good night, man.
All right, take care.
Okay, like today's, I've had a relatively light day, so I'm messing around in here the whole day, but I'm gonna gloat a little bit. Before I go. It's like. I told you Chainlink was going to do good. I'm pretty good at picking these at timing wise, but we're at like $13 now, not bad. So I think like the next FIB extension for Chainlink, if you got it, is around 16. So there's probably going to be another like pause at about $16 where people will be selling and trading and whatever. I think based on past performance, again, you can never really tell for sure. But I think 21, we went from like, with Chainlink, we've gone from like the $5 range to $21 range, I think two other times in its history. And you're talking about that type of move is usually within weeks. I don't know if that will happen this time for sure, but I would say like 21, it was the obvious destination when I bought it a year and a half ago. My sense was that 21 was sort of like the easy target. Now, does it go beyond all that? I don't know, but like, I suspect 21 is an easy target. Again, not suggesting anyone buy it or whatever. I picked this sucker up at like $7. So like I planned my thesis out that 21 was a good target. And then now I've questioned whether I'm going to mess with it at 21 because of all the new developments that came out for it over the past few months. And I'm quite impressed. So I think it has the chance to really be one of the ones that really runs past its prior high over the next year. And so like I have decided not to try to trade it and just hold on to it for the next couple of years. I've already held it for like a year and a half. Like, what am I doing? Like, why not just wait? So I'm not too worried about it, but that's where I'm at. Hopefully everyone had a good time today. Enclave, good catching up with you, man. Any other comments, questions, anything like that comes out at you today?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Very interesting.
Yep. Like, yeah, these things get fun. And like, I think hopefully I'd like to eventually have the devs to build what I'm trying to create. Like, but I've been kind of dreaming up the ideas in the background. Every time we have these conversations, I have like, I pigeonhole some of these ideas like that Jonathan brought up and like figure out how to incorporate these different ideas into it. Pretty cool stuff. Okay, guys. Oh, you know what? Oh, there's up. He was coming up for just a second. Let me get him. Hey, bud, what's going on? Good.
Haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, what's
happening? Much. I was going to see if you were done with the shills or if I could show you another one.
Show me another one.
I think I told you about this one on Twitter the other day, but I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at it or not, but it's that Zephyr protocol. It's kind of like the Luna, but it doesn't print at all, so there's no way to go to zero on it.
Let me see here. Zephyr.
So it's a proof of work protocol. It's pretty much if Monero and Deged had a baby. So Deged being the Ergo / ADA protocol that does the, it's a collateralized, over collateralized protocol. So it goes like 400% or plus for the backing using a primitive. But what's really cool about the Zephyr is that they took Monero's privacy mechanism, RandomX, and they used that as the consensus mechanism. And then they also added some other things to protect like the peg where they move, they use like moving averages and everything else. It's kind of complicated, but once you really figure out like how they, the mechanics behind it, it's super cool. Cause pretty much there's the Zephyr coin that is where all the value is stored or partially anyway. And then you can mint ZSD, which is their stable dollar. Again, it's a privacy dollar, so you can't trace it. It's using Monero's consensus. So you mint the ZSD with the ZEth, and that accounts for 400% of the collateral. And then there's another position that gets taken in order to back
where do you pick up, like, so what do you recommend? Like, it would be the Zephyr token that you
know. So it's actually a coin. So all this is hard baked in. Hard baked into the protocol too. So it's not like there's nothing manual. It's not like Terra Luna where they were, you know, manually just doing swaps and everything for the peg. Like, this is
where did you buy it?
You can buy it at MEXC or a bunch of other smaller exchanges, but I've been mining it as well. It just launched, I believe, like, I don't know, like 6 months ago or so. It's fairly new.
Let me see.
What's it called?
Zephyr. This looks super
interesting. Yeah, no, it's super, super interesting. It's fascinating to me. It's what's really interesting about it too, again, is the privacy mechanism behind it, because it's just like what Doe had envisioned, but truly untraceable.
So it's ZEPH is the value accrual token, right? Like, that's where that's the speculative
asset. That's part of it. So I was getting to the other part of it, and this is where it gets super interesting. So, like, it's very much kind of like Luna, where you can, like, play all these different strategies, but one of them is there's 400% behind the ZEth part of it, but there's another one called ZRS, and that's the ZEth reserve coin. And what you do is you take ZEth and you mint ZRS when the protocol ratio gets under 800%. So there's a visualization I can send you so you can take a look at it, but from four to...
Yeah, it's like it's balancing.
Exactly. So from 400% to 800%, you can mint ZRS. And what's really cool about ZRS is that by holding ZRS, you get to get 20% of the block rewards. So right now the block rewards are about 16 ZEF per block. And I think it's every 2 minutes, I believe. I have to take a look at it. But they're, so every 2 minutes of the block, that's...
Couple of questions. What are you mining this on? Like, what kind
of... So it's a CPU algorithm. It's RandomX. It's the same thing as Monero is.
CPU, so you can just use any PC.
Yep, any PC. So there's anybody from the, you know, from a Ryzen, the slowest Ryzen you can get, all the way up to the Threadrippers, you know, that they're using those for that.
So can you mint, like, when you're mining, are you paid in the unstable coin or the stable?
So you're paid with ZEF. And if you want to, everybody is like, it's in terms of the block rewards, those are in ZEF. And the only way to get ZSD is to mint it from ZEF. So that's what I mean by it can't print itself to zero.
Can you mint it in a decentralized way? So, like, let's say I have mined ZEF. Can I convert that to the stable without going to a centralized exchange at all?
Because it's all done on chain in their wallet. So you...
Ooh. That's pretty impressive.
Yes. So it's all built into the protocol.
Like, if you're not paying attention to what he just said, like, yeah, you're basically like blending the benefits of mining with the ability to create like an untraceable stable.
Not to mention that if you can take USDT and go to ZEF and then go to the stable and, you know, play around with it and then go back to USDT, and there you go. In terms of, you know, wanting to change a wallet and obscure where you're going and what you're doing.
I like it. It sounds like there is a use case and a purpose, like, that.
That's exactly what I need, dude.
Yeah, it's so what you need.
But check out.
Yeah, like, in other words, you could then trade back and forth between the stable and the, like, can you burn it also?
No, so
like,
it doesn't burn. So yeah, I guess it does burn, but in the sense that exactly what you were saying. So I was playing it the other day and it was coming down, and what I did was I minted a bunch of the stable coin and I sat in the stable coin, and then when it came down, I went back to ZEF and I was able to pick up like a 20% gain.
Nice.
Because I knew it was gonna come down. And that's what I mean by it's just like Luna, where you can play like the reserve side, where if you want to sit inside like it's kind of like a leverage position against the protocol.
Yes, it is.
Where you're sitting there, and as it's going up, like right now, the conversion rate is 0.78 ZRS to one ZEF. So if you go to, I think the site is called network.zephyrprotocol.com, it'll show you all of the stats, the metrics and everything. Yeah, like the moving average and the spot.
Like when you might be, there might be times when you're better off like buying the ZEF. There's other times you might be better like converting your ZEF to the stable. And there's other times where you might be better off like converting the stable to ZEF or whatever, right?
Exactly.
Like, So yeah, that's super interesting.
And everything's done by the moving average, so that you can't, like, a whale can't come in and like manipulate. Like, they can't come in and shoot the price of ZEF down and, you know, mint a bunch of ZSD and try to play around with it, because it all works off of a moving average. So it takes a lot of time for things to actually, for it to affect the protocol.
That's super interesting. So it's at MEXC, and
it's at MEXC. It's at non KYC. It's at which is, you know, another privacy type of smaller sex. There's also, what is it, Safe Trade, EGX. There's a bunch of small ones. MEXC is the largest one it's on, but it's really new. Like, the only way they're able to get it listed too is there was a pre-mine on. This is the, just to give you a quick tokenomics, I think it's 18.4 million. Is the max token supply. There is a tell emission at the end too. It's just like Monero, so that miners can still get paid once it's done. And I think that's after 100 years. So it's pretty much the same emission curve as Bitcoin or Monero. I think we're in year one or two right now too. So right now there's a high inflationary rate on it. But it's just like Bitcoin was.
Yeah, it shows like summer being like the earliest price action on CoinMarketCap at least.
No, I'd have to send you the smaller exchanges, because it was being traded on like TXBit and like all those smaller ones.
Oh, sure. It's not going to show up. But like, that price action is still on a very low market cap, because we're on, like, the market cap on this thing is like, at least on here, it says it's.
Yeah, it's like 8 mil, 9 mil right now.
But how does it know the market cap? Is there like?
So there's a price oracle.
How do you know how much of the stable there is if it's privacy? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what is it recording?
You'd have to look at the white paper, and it's a very in-depth one. In fact, it talks about all the different types of stable coins that have been created, like Haven and Terra and USDT, and all the different types of, why they don't work and what ZEF does and how it fixes it. And they do a really good job, but it's not just a bunch of fluff too. There's actual maths in there with equations and.
Yeah, the whole thing sounds pretty sexy to me. I think it's worth looking into. I need to find out how to get to MEXC and get some maybe, or I might just figure out how to like mine it.
So MEXC is pretty cool. What you do with MEXC is you just like what somebody else said, is that you use the powers of the internet, you know, with showing where your location is not at, and you're good to go after you do that. But in terms of your cell phone, they don't care. I don't know what their deal is with the PC and with the cell phone, but once you have an account, you know, being in the US, you're fine.
So like, at some point, if the stable gets popular, it's possible that the stable might not get listed on, say, for example, UX.
No, they all are. Exchange. Well, so the US exchanges, I don't think so. But right now, like, that's the goal of the project, is that it's not really a chain where they're going to have a bunch of, you know, dApps being built on it. They legitimately want to be a USDT and a USDC competitor. So they're trying to build bridges and trying to get their stable on exchanges right now. In fact, that's what they've been doing, is listing.
It's not even trying to be like some L1 or some shit.
No, but it is like an L1, but it is
proof of work.
Yeah, exactly. They're just trying to get the stable coin out there and create a huge demand for the stable coin.
By L1, I mean like they're not trying to be a smart
contract. Yeah, exactly. No smart contracts. They're not going to have much dApps being built on it.
Proof of work mechanism, and like, you're good to go. Yep. Like, do you feel like the mining part of it is quite profitable now, or like
it's about three times more profitable than Monero? And right now it's sort of a problem because all the Monero miners are mining it and then they're dumping it to buy Monero. But if you look at the buying pressure,
because they're using their Monero miners that they already have, and they're like, oh, let's
exactly why would they mine stuff. Monero when they could mine, you know, three times as much and just sell it and buy the Monero.
Well, it's good to have like a pre-existing miner network though, because it brings the hash.
It happens all the time, man. Like, right, we usually average around like 500 mega hash per, you know, at any given time. But right now, it's about double that, or maybe even triple now, just because of the pump that we had the last couple of days. So, and that, I think it was like 4 or 5 days ago, it went up to like $5 or a little over.
Interesting. No, like with such a small market cap, like I wouldn't mind like just buying a pile of it at size, like just getting in there like really deep.
Somebody's trying to buy a bunch of it at $4. Like, there's like 10,000. There's a 10,000 buy order at $4 on MEXC right now, and I think it's the same person.
Interesting. No, it looks like an interesting, very very early thing with like a real use case potential.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I like to think of it as if Monero had a stable coin, and if you were buying it early, that's what the potential of this could be. Not that it's going to be, but I think you know where I'm going with it. The potential's there.
Yeah, I mean, a privacy stable. I mean, you can imagine like the type of, like, there's plenty of crowds that would be super interested in that, right?
Yeah, at first I was trying to wrap my head around it and how it would all work out and everything, but because it's proof of work, I don't think there's a way to stop it. You know, it's going to be one of those.
Exactly. Exactly. And think about like what that implies.
Yep.
No, it's like, that's a pretty epic outcome if they can get this to scale and work as intended.
So in terms of the doomsday scenarios too, real quickly, is if let's say the price goes down to zero on Zeph, the first thing that happens is that ZRS gets liquidated and then Zeph is what's left. So in terms of if there was any ZSD in circulation, it would never go down to zero. It would just be, redeemable to whatever the value is left in the protocol. So that's how it's set up though.
Yeah, so proof of work coins and things get some outside influence, by the way, is futures.
Absolutely, markets. The energies. They're...
So the issue for Bitcoin, for example, is there's more, in some ways, that there's like more paper Bitcoin traded than real Bitcoin. Yeah. In the sense that like futures contracts are like have more transactions than the actual network a lot of the times. So this could be a problem because technically you could have like you could have an exchange running shenanigans like an FTX type exchange, you know, like where they have a lot more shorts available than that really exist. And that could get really weird. So you could wind up with like crazy price action. And so I wonder how they account for that kind of death spiral.
It's the moving average
of shorting it. Like, yeah, but even with the moving average, I guess the question is if the system becomes big enough, right? Then there is still a reason to manipulate that at size at some level. But yeah, I guess the moving average helps that. But I'm sure they've thought about this. I mean, it's not like unheard of. And so is it like just super over collateralized? Is that what it is?
It is. It's up to eight. Right now, it's got to be a minimum of eight. Well, I should say a minimum of 400%, but it's usually 800% or higher. Right now, it's sitting at 1,000% collateralized.
The reason someone would bother supporting this network and sort of like collateralizing it is because like the Zeph token itself is a proof of work, therefore a store of value token, irrespective of what it, like the network has its own Bitcoin essentially.
Exactly. And it's how you think about it. Exactly. And then the reserve coin gets the 20% of the block reward. So by sitting there, you're literally like collecting 20% of all of the mining rewards that are coming. And then you also get all the fees too, because all the fees that are being transferred. Oh yeah, and then when you send a coin, it's dirt cheap. It's not even, it's like 0.00005 ZEP or something. It's like soul cheap, like almost that cheap.
How do you avoid the problem though? Like, you know, like Bitcoin had like a kind of like Satoshi disappear and, you know, all this sort of thing. Like, how do you get to a situation of credible decentralization early in this network? Like, wouldn't like the early adopters just be just ZEP rich basically? And then like, can dump on the people later or something?
Well, sure. That's the only, I mean, so in terms of getting back to the tokenomics, so 18.4 million in total. And then they got the dev team took 500,000 on a pre-mine. So on Genesis block in order to fund liquidity and the development / listings. So that's how Mexi was paid for. And it wasn't paid for with the Zeph coin. It was paid for with the USDT. So they can't just dump on everybody. But in terms of what's the value of being early, of course, it's to mine. And of course, it's just how block rewards work on any proof of work mining chain, too. Usually it's...
Well, no, I didn't mean like what's the value of being early. The question is like a lot of these proof of work chains that developed after BTC, the mining pools were way too centralized.
Oh, OK.
So this is what how do you create like...
So that's why it was CPU. So when you deal with ASICs, that's how you get centralized, is that the ASIC machines are so powerful, they cost so much, and only certain people can buy them. When you do a CPU, like the Talarian type of algorithm, like RandomX, anybody with a CPU can mine it. I can mine it with a Raspberry Pi, or I can mine it with 3900X.
It's like running BitTorrent or whatever.
It's the same thing about running, same thing, just like running BitTorrent. In fact, that's why you see all of the bad wrap around Monero and what are those things called? The ransomware things. Because that's what's running in the background and all those like spywares and all that kind of stuff is usually it's mining Monero when, you know, hackers are doing that shit. They just use...
In your mind, like for setting up a miner for Zeph, like what kind of time does this take? Like, we're talking about buying just random computer. Can I use my Mac that's sitting on my desktop doing nothing?
So you can use any computer, but you were talking about any, just like mining in general, where there's going to be efficiencies, and Macs just aren't efficient when it comes to CPU algorithms. But what are is Ryzen's. AMD knows what they're doing for whatever reason. And then it would in terms of efficiency, it would go AMD, Intel, and then maybe Mac or RISC-V.
So you get yourself like an AMD Ryzen based PC.
Yeah, you, in fact, you
does it have to be really exotic? Does it have to be really exotic?
No, like, in fact, for like 12 to 13, I think I want to say like kilohash is what they call it, KHS. That's what I run. All my rigs are like 12 to 13. And I think it was like $380 per rig.
How many rigs did you put together?
I put together, I don't know, like 5 of them so far.
So like, how much money am I spending like on
$300, $350 per rig?
What are you paying for, like?
And then you get like, I don't know. Right now they're mining about 5 of them are doing like maybe a Zeph a day. So I make like $150 a month right now based on the price of the coin. But
are you coming out with a positive ROI as far as like electricity?
Oh, yeah.
Or not yet?
It's about half. So whatever, like if I'm mining a coin a day, it's probably taking me about half a coin to mine it in terms of electricity. And I'm paying around like 11 cents an hour. Like my electricity isn't you know,
like
terribly
personally,
cheap.
Are you like, are you paying for your power bill by selling some, or are you just like hodling or whatever?
No, I hodl and then I just let the government pay it, because I'm a miner where I'm gonna, you know, I have a business and I throw it back to them. They tax me, so I tax them, or I, you know, I write off my electricity. Is what I'm saying.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Like I've got a piece of real estate with a fair bit of room in the attic. I could run quite a bit of like, I could run some machines theoretically as part of that project, but just like picking your brain.
Yeah, in terms of if you're going to like write off shit like I was, then of course you have to tell them about it. But if not, then just, you know, just use it as a throwaway money, and you'll never, you know, in your mind, hey, here's $350. I'm going to throw away, because in the next 2 years, I'll mine X amount of Zeph that will be ghost and no one will know.
Yeah, part of the purpose of mining it is just to have ghost money.
It legitimately is ghost money. That's what I keep telling my wife too, because she's like, why is this going to be so, you know, what's so special about this one?
What's so special about it? Yeah, like,
well,
that's
proof of work Monero stablecoin is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, even BTC is ghost money if you mine it, but the difference is there. It's not a stable.
Well, yeah, if you look it up on the Block Explorer too, you'll see what I mean. Like, you can see your own transaction, but you can't see anybody's wallets or anybody else's transactions or anything like that. Like, it's pretty hard to see what's going on in this network. They use like ring signatures and everything else that Monero does, which is a good and a bad thing. If you're trying to figure out what's going on, it's a bad thing. But if you obviously don't want that, then. But like you said, it's like Monero, where it's going to be ghost money. No one can take it from you, but it's a lot more, or it's like Bitcoin, excuse me, but it's a lot more ghost than Bitcoin is. Because like I said, you can't even verify what people have or where things go.
Well, ghost as in like, if you have a ghost network, you can like trade things within the ghost, like space, you know, like in heaven or whatever, like, and you can trade it without like having taxable events too. So even if you were going to take it out as profit sometime and convert to USD, like nobody knows how many transactions and shit you did in between.
Exactly.
Which basically is no different than like a black box.
Exactly.
So it's the same thing like in secret network or whatever, like you don't have to show all the transactions you do within it. It's like, that's the beauty of it. Yeah. Super interesting.
So there's my show for you.
I feel like people need. Are there any bridges? Just one question.
Not yet. That's a goal. So if you go to the project, and the devs are in Discord, there's two of them. One, I think his name's like Finzar. He's an anonymous dev, which I commend. And at the same time, obviously, some people would have a problem with, but it's being like what the project is, you can kind of see why. But are there bridges currently? No. Are they being worked on? Absolutely. There's a community project too that's happening right now, where they're already trying to set up merchant payment services when they've got a website already up and they're building out the dApp for it, so that merchants can use it and accept it as a payment. There's also a mobile wallet coming that's being worked on right now for iOS and Android, and then the web wallet was just launched last week, which I think is what pumped it.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, I like hearing about it, because like a lot of times little tweets and things that I don't think about it long enough, and I don't have time to sit and like read too many things. So I'm like, I'm glad I caught you.
Oh yeah, no, I figured this is right up your alley. I'm going to send you this network.zephyrprotocol URL so you can take a look at it. But if you're interested in it, and if you, the alpha here, if anybody's listening and truly interested, is the ZRS. Like, I can't tell you how much that thing, what that's going to do in terms of how pumped I am about it. I got in it when it was around like 0.50. And in 1 month, I gained 55% of my holdings. So if, you know, if I had, let's say 500 ZEF in there, I got 255 extra on top just by holding in there. It's insane, man. Like, I can't stress enough how important ZRS is going to be. And if this protocol goes big, like right now it's trading at, I believe, like 2 to 3 times the price of whatever ZEF is on all the smaller exchanges where it's offered at. So alpha is to try to get ZEF and try to get ZRS minted, like get in there. Cause I think in the last 60 days, it's only come down into the pocket to mint twice. And the first time was when it opened at the fork. And then the second time was just once when it dipped down and gave people a chance.
Sounds good, man. All right, guys, hopefully everyone got some alpha there and can make use of it. It's been a fun day. We'll catch you guys later.
See you, man.
Yes.
Nice.
I'm gonna tell you something. When the world starts to get really bad and these mugs out here robbing, you gonna love digital currency.
All these motherfuckers, they be running and gunning, and I'm all like, I'm sitting back just having fun in the sun, and then I'm like 1 out of 100, I'm just building abundance. The sum of everything we built during the last 100 upsets. You're getting salty, feeling faulty, you ain't no man. I keep Robo here, grinning ear to ear, throwing up anarchy, smoking toiletries, spitting philosophies. Look at the dossier, we rack like geology. There's layers to this shit, like it's sedimentary. All these little onion peels getting torn off and buried. Imagine the smell, that shit is a vital experience. Without no and how you will not survive, period.
He's a fucking trip, man.
Jimmy, if you listen to this, right, you're getting absolutely fucking ripped to death, like on a spaceship for the life, you little troglodyte bastard. I hope you fucking listen, I hope you come to my house, son. I swear to God, man, I've got fucking loads of weapons and mad dogs, man. You're just a little rat, man. Go on, fuck off, man. Go on, fuck off. Harmony. Me and another one, do you looking for a fucking job? You fucking idiot. You've just been fucking at the desk. Fuck off.
Try to change the course of the portion philosophy. I'm just here for the corporation sponsor the bottom. It feels like I won the lottery, like I'm ghosts in this pottery. Chill, Demi, boy, the shit's supposed to be haunting. If it wasn't, ain't no puzzle, you would try to train your muscle. Airdropping like a fatal hustle, but the pay is bustin'. Think of all the loss accrued just to pick up on the tricky custom. I figured all those sub-downs would make up for something. I guess it just goes to show, the fuck do I know? At least it's quiet over here, I like my little silo. It's better than watching them fight over how to divide my time between sitting at the desk and the ride home. Devs at Mickey D's, they leeching off that Wi-Fi. Zapdos and Moldy shipping more than 5 guys. Console open, waiting for the kamikaze. When the flash loans bang, they're feeling like paparazzi. Snapshot motherfuckers. We got layers, meteor, jawbreaker. We cracking a lot of craters. We rapping a lot of pay dirt, maxing out relayers. Imagine the smell, $5 wrench to your Darth Vader.
It's really funny to us at Binance that everyone here is talking about blockchain attack. We know who all the validators are. We know where they live, and we're going to their house with a wrench, a big wrench, and we will attack them with the wrench, and then we will take their validator node physically and put it in a truck and drive it to China.
Right, so this is an extension of the activities you performed on BTC, right? Funding and creating these massive Bitcoin mines, putting them in caves, putting them in factories that were abandoned in the past, and also using electromagnetic pulse bombs to detonate the USA and the other country mines, right? So you're now applying this strategy to LUNC in order to take over the chain, is that correct?
It's more simple. There's no EMP bomb. It's just a van of men in balaclava, and they have wrench, and they're taking the physical validators from people's houses. They are usually very fat, and they're usually in the shower with trying to wash their mice droppings off their clothes. So it's very simple. We just walk in and we take it. But if there's someone who is sitting at the computer or sleeping at the computer, we hit them with the wrench really, really hard. And then they say, stop.
don't do that again. And we say, that's okay. Just give us your validator node, and then they give it to us and we drive it to China.
Channel Spaces.